Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Join us for an in-depth look at Iowa agriculture. Here's your host, Riley Smith.
With the weather finally cooperating, planters will hopefully be rolling in the field soon. And if you're listening to this from the tractor, stay safe and good luck with planting. Welcome to this week's edition of Weekend Ag Matters. I'm Riley Smith. Russ Parker, Dustin Huffman, and Mark Magnuson will join us later on in the show. As for right now, let's start with a quick look at the news headlines. Well, the April WASDE report came and went with little to remark. This was largely anticipated, though, and the markets are already focusing back on planting and the weather. The USDA is still choosing to not make any changes to the Brazilian crop, while analysts down in South America are actually maybe even cutting it a little bit lower than it would normally be or would potentially be. Allendale commodity broker Greg McBride said the different projections might finally meet in the middle later on in the crop year.
Well, a lot of times the way it works out is that the Brazilians or private analysts down there do cut more than what is needed along the way, and then they end up later on as the crop is finalized, they'll bring those numbers up. So, if you look at the CONAB number that came out today at 146.5 million tons, it's still substantially lower. The best guess estimate is probably that we're overestimating that crop and they're underestimating that crop, and we meet somewhere in the middle, maybe around, say, 151 or something like that. You did have CONAB come in and lower the corn side of things as well to just under 111 million tons for Brazil's crop. And the USDA, again, no changes there at 124 million metric tons. So this is a situation where the USDA is just low playing it or being conservative.
In other news, the Retailers Motor Fuels Gallons annual report just released by the Iowa Department of Revenue found E15 sales increased 47% year-on-year to a record of 178 million gallons. The report also found a record 68 million gallons of biodiesel was blended into Iowa diesel for 2023. For the first time, E15 sales accounted for more than 10% of Iowa gasoline sales in 2023, hitting 13.3% according to the report. Today, one in four Iowa fuel stations offers E15. For only the second time, the report found that sales of on-road B11 and higher biodiesel blends eclipsed 60% of the market. The average percentage of biodiesel and on-road blended gallons hit a record 14.4%. In off-road diesel, usually used in farm and construction equipment, the report found a fivefold increase in B20 and higher blends. The Iowa Department of Revenue identified retailers for the report using information from the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship's Motor Fuel License Database and from internal records. And finally, Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Nagg this week announced that the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship is now accepting applications for water quality implementation and demonstration projects. Selected projects will help deliver outreach and technical assistance to farmers and landowners to advance the implementation of conservation practices proven to protect and enhance water quality. Since the launch of Water Quality Initiative in 2013, the department has supported and led 79 different watershed projects. Currently, the department has 29 active Water Quality Initiative watershed projects working within 56 different counties. These projects are in addition to the numerous other statewide programs, cost-share resources, more than 100 urban conservation projects, multiple batch and build agreements, wetland partnerships with numerous conservation groups, and much more. Implementation and demonstration projects should focus on outreach and technical assistance that will directly lead to the adoption of water quality-focused conservation practices. Successful applicants will need to exhibit a proven track record of delivering the necessary planning, development, and design of projects and practices. Strong partnerships with stakeholders that have or will be contributing significant resources to the project are also critically important. Soil and water conservation districts, counties, county conservation boards, other units of government, not-for-profit non-governmental organizations, public water supply utilities, or watershed management organizations are eligible to submit applications. Applicants are also encouraged to partner with additional stakeholders who can assist with outreach and technical assistance. Applications must be received by the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship by 4:30 p.m. on Friday, May 24th of this year. Project guidance can be found online or can be requested by contacting the department's Division of Soil Conservation and Water Quality at 515-281-5851. And that's all the time we have for news headlines this week. Check out the rest of our daily ag news stories at iowaagnet.com. We'll go ahead and kick it over to Russ Parker with his faith-based food for thought here on Weekend Ag Matters.
This is the season when all the time that goes into preparation goes into quote-unquote go mode. In the past week, I've seen oats being planted, fertilizer carts going back and forth, tractors with discs and corn stubble, and even a few beans being drilled. And at home, kind of the same thing going on, however, a much smaller scale. Fertilizer on the lawn, garden getting tilled, roses uncovered and tended to, and new stone being ordered for the driveway. One other item involved in the prep work at home is the zero-turn mower, which can be described as highly reliable and doesn't owe me anything. I retrieved it from its winter parking spot earlier this week, and when I turned the key, of course after checking all the fluids, it started right up. But there were two flat tires, and the front one needed replacement, and it set me back from the first lawn mowing for a couple of days. Getting things ready seems to be a mandatory experience if we want to have positive, predictable outcomes. And most of the time, it requires flexibility, a willingness to maybe do something a little differently, or at least be in a position to respond in a way that's appropriate to a challenge. In the example with the mower, while I was hoping to fix that flat tire, circumstances required a new one. My point in all this revolves around the need to have a plan, and each plan then in turn have a predicted outcome. We have to trust the plan and that outcome. I'm reminded of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount and what happened at dinner time. The disciples were anxious and didn't trust the plan and were even more skeptical of the outcome. But as we read, there were leftovers. Springtime is here, a time to implement investments, plant seeds, and watch those plans grow into fruition. And our spiritual growth plan should be no different, including trusting the plan. Proverbs answers this where we read, "Many are the plans in a person's heart, but is the Lord's purpose that prevails." Food for thought, I hope. This is Russ Parker. Have a blessed day.
Thanks, Russ. That's it for segment one on this week's episode. Coming up after this short break, Dustin talks with U.S. Soy Excellence Center Director Tori Sorensen. This is Weekend Ag Matters.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's your host, Dustin Hoffman.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I'm Dustin Hoffman. While we talked with the U.S. Soybean Export Council during Commodity Classic to talk about what they're doing to grow exports of our U.S. soybeans, it also talks about education around the globe, and that's where the U.S. Soy Excellence Center comes in. I had a chance to talk with Southeast Iowa native Tori Sorensen, who is the director of that program. And first of all, asked her to give us a 30,000-foot view of what the program means.
So USEC has always had educational and training programs around the world, helping to build that preference of U.S. soy. Back in 2019, we established the Soy Excellence Centers, where we are reaching the lower to entry, the entry to medium level employees at businesses in emerging and developing markets, really to help bring that capacity and workforce training in those markets.
I asked Teresa what they're kind of thinking on and focusing on as they move into 2024.
So since 2019, that's a great question. Since 2019, we have trained over 18,500 individuals in over 40 countries around the world. So we have five different Soy Excellence Centers around the world in Thailand, Nigeria, Egypt, Honduras, and India. And what I'm really excited about for 2024 is bringing India online as our newest soy expert.
I asked Sorensen what those trainees walk away from the program learning as they go back to their own countries and businesses and learning how to use U.S. soy more efficiently.
So those 18,500 trainees from around the world are really focused on picking between a track on poultry, swine, aquaculture, and feed mill tracks. So keeping in mind, these individuals are entry to medium level employees within their organization. So organizations are using these programs to help build their own individual training programs. So to get a better understanding of the overall how the business and the ag industry works around the world.
Aquaculture has been a hot topic in the soy industry for the last couple of years, and I asked Sorensen what she sees as the global use of soy for this aquaculture ventures is growing and how she's seeing it impact the industry.
That's a great question. So when we were in Honduras a few years ago, we got to see some of the in-pond raceway systems that we have. They have a great tilapia business in Honduras that's actually consuming 100% U.S. soy that's coming into the United States, which is great. When we were in Cairo, Egypt last year, we got to go to World Fish. World Fish is a great aquaculture education center using in-pond raceways to help really bring that protein into the market.
And as we always talk with the U.S. Soybean Export Council, it's about growing those markets and maintaining the existing markets. And I asked Tori Sorensen how the U.S. Soy Excellence Center is helping contribute to that endeavor.
That's a really great question. So it's so important to educate people, because when you educate people, they then become very good, very aware of your brand, and then also want to continue to do business with you. So as you look at these markets that we have soy excellence centers in, such as Honduras and Egypt and Southeast Asia, which are all very good buyers of U.S. soy, we also have soy excellence centers in two markets, such as Nigeria and India, where they're not currently purchasing U.S. soy. So by educating people at the entry level, they then become aware of your brand and want to have that loyalty and relationship with you as they move through their careers. So you're really building that demand and preference at the ground level.
With over 5 years and 18,000 trainees going through the U.S. Soy Excellence Center, I asked Sorensen to kind of look back on the success rate that they've had and the successes they've seen that they've been able to build upon in the industry.
You know, I remember 5 years ago, it was right before COVID, we were sitting at a commodity classic and we put the group together for the Soy Excellence Centers to start them. We very quickly went into virtual meetings, getting things launched. And now as we look back at where we are today versus where we were then, I go into markets such as Mexico where I get to hear about people that have incorporated this into their training systems that are really helping educate their businesses, and then they're becoming drivers and consumers of our products, ordering even more of our products. As you go into markets where they're not currently buying soy, you look at how you, or U.S. soy, you look at how they have built a brand preference for what you're doing and how they're lining things up to start to become purchasers of our product. So it's really great to see where we are today versus where we were 5 years ago, as we're actually at that point where we're adding new excellence centers and we're looking at adding new training programs such as dairy.
I asked Sorensen that as a Iowa native, what's the message that she's able to bring back to the folks in Iowa? What are the Iowa producers able to take away from initiatives like the U.S. Soy Excellence Center through the U.S. Soybean Export Council?
Yes, one of the things I love about going back home to Southeast Iowa is getting to talk to my family about how great this project is and how much we are really impacting lives around the world. You know, people talk a lot about global food security and what can we do to help solve global food security. Well, the Iowa farmers have been contributors to this program since day one. And being able to look at where we are today and talk to them about all these great programs, and they follow me on social media, they get to see some of the people, some of the trainees that I talk to, and really see how this is impacting the lives around the world. I think this is one of those programs that it's a program that farmers are going to take a lot of pride in, and do take a lot of pride in being involved in something that is fundamentally changing lives around the world.
If you want to learn more about the work being done by the U.S. Soy Excellence Center, Sorensen has a way for you to find out more about the endeavor.
They can go to the soyexcellencecenter.org. They can also find out more about us on social media and on the website.
That again was Southeast Iowa native and the head of the U.S. Soy Excellence Center, Tori Sorensen, here when we talked with her at Commodity Classic down in Houston, Texas, about the work being done to help promote soy around the world. That's going to do it for segment two here on Weekend Ag Matters. Mark Magnuson is raring to go. He's going to wrap the show coming up next here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
The Iowa Soybean Association celebrates National Soy Foods this month in April. Did you know foods containing soy protein provide 9 essential amino acids and reduce the risk for heart disease? Foods made from soybeans such as edamame, tofu, and soy milk are packed with fiber, iron, and zinc. Create a healthy lifestyle while supporting Iowa farmers by consuming more soy-based foods. Brought to you by the Iowa Soybean Association, powered by the Soybean Checkoff, celebrating 60 years of moving the industry forward.
Mark Magnuson for the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network, and I'm joined today by Grant Kimberly. We're at the Iowa Soybean Association. Grant, could you remind our viewers what your role is within the ISA?
Yes, I'm Senior Director of Market Development for Iowa Soybean Association, so I oversee all of our demand and market development building projects for the Soybean Association. I also serve as the Executive Director of the Iowa Biodiesel Board, which is a subsidiary organization that we work with the biodiesel industry in the state.
So, Grant, we know this following the industry closely, but for our viewers, our listeners that might not realize it, soy processing really ramping up in recent years. Could you kind of tell us where we're at on the timeline of trying to get that infrastructure all up to speed for what we need right now?
That's exactly right. We're seeing something we really haven't seen in 30 years, a massive increase in our soy processing capacity. Roughly 600 million bushels of additional soy processing capacity has been announced. Now, that may not all come to pass where we have all that be built out, but a good share of that is already been built here so far, and more will be built over the next couple of years. And that's something, you know, if you put it in perspective, Iowa grows about 600 million bushels. So we're talking about an expansion that could theoretically process the entire state's crop.
And so, Grant, are there facilities that have been built here in the state, specifically around the state recently? Where are we looking at as far as new facilities?
Yeah, the facilities are really all over the country, but primarily you're talking the Midwest. Within Iowa, we've seen a new facility just finished here the last couple of years called Shell Rock Soy Processing up in Shell Rock, Iowa. There's also another facility being built in Alta, Iowa, Northwest Iowa, called Platinum Crush. And then the existing soy crush facilities in Iowa have also, some of them have gone through expansion projects as well. So that's part of it. But, you know, mostly you're talking about Midwest expansion.
So what does that mean for Iowa soybean farmers? Obviously, if a facility is close to them, that's going to be very good for the ease of getting those beans there and marketing those beans. But what does that mean for the farmer specifically?
Yeah, that's right. It just gives you more market opportunities as a farmer. And what that will do in that local area, maybe a 50-mile radius, is you're going to see improved basis. The cash price opportunities will improve at certain times of the year because of that demand. And so, you know, having more markets like that, more demand, that's helpful. It also is going to help diversify our market portfolio overseas, because now we're going to be having to become a larger exporter of soybean meal rather than just being exporting whole beans.
So, Grant, let's talk about biofuels then, and leading into that demand growing for biofuels, and then specifically biodiesel. We know that biodiesel sometimes gets, I think, lost a little bit in the shuffle, but certainly a lot of things happening with it as we continue to have new technology all the time developing. So where are we at right now?
You know, when you're talking about the biofuel market from our perspective, you're really talking about three main markets. The biodiesel market, which historically has been what's built this industry, and it still is growing and has opportunities. There's a lot of exciting new markets there. You're also talking about renewable diesel, which is a similar but yet different product, more like diesel fuel that's made. And a lot of times existing petroleum refineries will retrofit and make this product around the coastal areas, wherever there's a low carbon incentive. And then sustainable aviation fuel, biofuels made from or aviation fuel made from biofuels. Those are the markets that we're talking about, and that's what's driving the soy crush expansion that we just talked about. But when you look at biodiesel, there's some exciting markets here that are still new and growing, and that's markets like the marine sector. You're talking about the railroad sector. Those markets we really haven't tapped into yet when it comes to biodiesel, and those are more so going to be biodiesel focused markets. But in general, anywhere in the Midwest, there's still strong state incentives that play into it as well that help grow this biodiesel market.
So could something like the marine sector, the railroad sector, could that be a real boom for growth if that were to open up fully and then be, I guess, an output for, or I guess an end point then for producing these byproducts from soybeans?
Yeah, those markets could really grow. And a lot of it's being not just driven by some government policies and incentives, but it's being driven by corporate policies. A lot of these large shipping companies now, their customer base wants them to reduce carbon emissions. You're not going to electrify a large Panamax-sized vessel. You're talking about this kind of different kind of powertrain. And the best option they have is a drop-in technology like using just inserting biodiesel into their fuel mix. And that can dramatically reduce their carbon emissions and reduce the pollutants out of the emissions. And, of course, it's a great economic driver for us.
And you touched on it, sustainable aviation fuel. We hear a lot about ethanol and how it ties into SAF. So where does the soybean side and the biofuel side for the soybean come into sustainable aviation fuel? Is that just part of the mix?
Yeah, it's part of the mix. When we talk about the aviation fuel side, there's different what we call pathways. And the ethanol to jet or the alcohol to jet pathway is the one that the ethanol industry is talking about. Great opportunity there for them. But our pathway is more what we call the fats and oils pathway. So it's a technology where you can take fats and oils and turn it into jet fuel. And actually, that's probably the one that we're going to see take advantage of it first, because it's the one that already meets all the low carbon emission requirements. And it's probably the easier technology to convert to sustainable aviation fuel initially. These renewable diesel facilities I talked about, all they have to do is take it through a little bit longer of a processing method. And basically, they can come out on the other end with aviation grade fuel. And so this alcohol to jet is one way. But yes, fats and oils, which we're going to use soybean oil, is the other way.
And it's very interesting because it seemed like just a few years ago, this seemed kind of like a, down the road, kind of a dream, I guess, really, for powering these planes through these renewable sources. And now we've actually seen it. We saw an actual flight fly from England to the United States. I believe that was in November. And that was with some of the oils and fats that you're talking about that were powering the plane.
That's right. A lot of the airline companies are all looking at this because, again, you can't electrify a plane very easily. So, and I don't think any of us really want to be flying on an electric plane at 35,000 feet over the Atlantic or Pacific Ocean. So, again, we're going to use the same engine technology, but we can use these drop-in fuels that are lower carbon and achieve these same goals. And these companies, they want to achieve a lower carbon emissions goal. And that market still has some time to go. It's got a long ways to go here to really get everything in place before it becomes a really big market. But the potential is there. I mean, just in the United States alone, I think we're talking well over 30 billion gallons of demand for aviation fuel. So a lot of exciting things for biodiesel, renewable diesel, and aviation fuel.
And really what all we're talking about today, and you being the very definitely the person to talk to about this, driving that demand upwards. And this is all these sources are driving demand for the Iowa soybean farmer.
It is. This all comes back to agriculture-derived feedstocks. And soybean oil on the fats and oil side is the most readily available oil that we have in the country. It usually makes up well over 50% of the feedstock mix. And so we're going to use all kinds of vegetable oils and animal fats. It's good for the livestock industry, but certainly soybean oil is going to be the leading part of that. And then what this does, it also makes us so we need to process more soybeans. We're going to have more meal now available. That should lower the meal costs. And then we're going to diversify our export markets, go to other markets around the world that want meal rather than whole beans, which is a good thing for us as well from that perspective.
So with soybean farmers you've talked to, do they realize, kind of exactly what's happening and being right on the vanguard of really these expanding new areas for technology to utilize the entire soybean?
I think a lot of farmers are starting to realize and see this almost fundamental shift and change we're starting to see in our marketplace. Maybe not to the same degree that that I do or whoever is in this in the weeds every single day, but it's coming. There are changes happening, and long term this should be a really good thing for the soybean farmer. Solidifies the demand that we're going to have for soybeans for a long time to come, and we're going to have to grow more soybeans down the road.
So, Grant, is there anything else you'd like to let our viewers know about when it comes to just continuing to drive demand and those new outlets for Iowa soybeans to, I guess, help power that?
You know, from our perspective as a farmer, I'm a farmer as well. Use the product when you have the opportunity to use the product that you produce, like biodiesel here in the Midwest. Ask your fuel supplier for it. You know, biodiesel adds and renewable diesel adds 13% to the net market value of price of soybeans. So that's a couple dollars a bushel. So the more we can grow these markets, whether it's here at home, locally on our own farm, or through the trucking industry, or the marine or rail, or aviation sector, all these markets are going to help us. So continue to use these products and look to see what happens when we continue to see the market grow.
And what better commercial or advertisement for those products than the actual farmers that grow them, using them to, I mean, the average consumer has to see that and say, you know what, this is, maybe I should be trying this out.
You're right. I mean, in Iowa alone, we have state incentives as well to make biodiesel blends a little less expensive than regular diesel fuel. So B11 blends or B20 blends are most common. We use B20 in our farm 6 months out of the year, and then the cooler months out of the year, we might use B11. And so those are the kind of the ways that we market that and use it, and it burns cleaner, burns really well, and all the engine companies have embraced it. So there's a lot of good benefits to it. And again, it comes back to, it just grows our marketplace and offers opportunities for our industry.
He is Grant Kimberly with the Iowa Soybean Association. Grant, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you to Grant Kimberly of the Iowa Soybean Association. And that wraps up segment number 3 and this week's episode of Weekend Ag Matters. You can find this episode and all of our previous episodes located on the podcast page of our website at iowaagnet.com. For Russ Parker, Dustin Huffman, and Riley Smith, I'm Mark Magnuson. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.